Technology, entertainment, and design. These are the original pillars of TED Talks. One of the featured speakers at this year's TED Conference checked all the boxes. He holds a doctorate in music and can write code. He makes notes on a page, and data points come to life and entertain and inform you in the process. Composer, artist, and performer are just a few ways to describe Luc Dubois. This Friday, he'll be here as part of TEDx KC, but right now he joins us by Skype from New York City. And Luc, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm well, thanks. And you're also an associate professor at New York University, where you co-direct the Integrated Digital Media Program at the Engineering School. How does a guy with a doctorate in music composition get into the engineering school?
Everybody's got to have a hobby. I started out as a composer, you know, writing music and playing music. And after a while, I started doing more and more stuff with computers, programming computers to do, you know, interesting things with originally just sound and music, but it sort of expanded into, you know, data and visual art and whatever. And the program that I run at NYU, it sort of looks at the intersection of engineering and creativity, sort of saying that, you know, that idea that engineers solve problems and artists ask questions is, you know, and never the twain shall meet is probably a bad one. And then we need engineers to ask the questions, and we need artists involved in solving the problems. And so it's a lot of fun.
How did you gravitate into data? How did that happen?
You know, it's a funny thing. I think if you think about it, and think about kind of what it is at its essence, you know, music is kind of data. And so people who are musicians and people who work with music have an affinity for working with numbers and working with abstract concepts to make people feel things, right? So if you think about what music is, it's, you know, notes and chords and keys and harmonies and melodies and rhythms. And all those things are kind of numeric, but they also make you feel. And that training got me really interested in seeing what I could do to do art kind of that riffs off data visualization, looking at, you know, the bar graphs and line graphs and all that stuff that we use in, you know, that we use in the newspapers today, and sort of saying, look, I'm going to take this and try to think of it like I'm a musician with it and use it to make sort of more, you know, kind of interesting things.
You know, this blending of computer and art you're talking about, you say more and more artists are coding and that musicians have been doing this stuff for years. But how has that changed things for artists, Luc, and what does it allow them to do?
You know, I think it'll, one thing is, you know, every artist or, you know, every civilization will use the maximum level of technology they have available to it to make art. That's kind of normal, right? And so in a weird way, when people say like, well, artists using computers is special, it's like I sort of dispute that. I actually think it's pretty natural. In the same way that, you know, 40 years ago we would have used printmaking. You know, if you think about people like Andy Warhol, you know, they were using the techniques of their age to make work. And so I don't think it's like weird that we do it. I think it allows us to play around with the cultural information of our time, which whether you like it or not, is kind of data. It's kind of big data. We're drowning in numbers. Between, you know, your stuff on your Facebook and your stuff on your Twitter and your stuff on your phone and your stuff off your Fitbit, right? You have you now have a, they call it the quantified self. You now have a dump of, you know, numbers associated with your person that follows along with you throughout your life. And people, you know, don't necessarily think about it that way because it's them, right? It's like you don't think of it as data. You think of it as photos of your kids and your family, right? Or you think of it as, you know, this is my exercise regimen, but it's really numbers. And so artists getting fluency and being able to work with that kind of like paint is really cool, right? Because then we can kind of comment on it and ask these questions.
You know, you question the way data is often presented these days. What do you see as the problem there?
I'm a little biased because my older brother's a photographer. So just to put that out there. But I often see data visualization when it's presented to the public as something that's often used when 20 years ago we would have used photography. And I bet the photograph might have been more effective. And that is a little bit of a disturbing trend when we start using bar graphs instead of photographs to describe, things that are really like disturbing phenomena in our culture. Like I don't really want to see, kids anesthetized by it, where they learn about, I don't know, a problem in America, gun violence or poverty or something like that.
We're taking the humanity out of it, you're saying.
Like when you look at it like a line graph, you start thinking of people as numbers, and that's really bad, and that disturbs me. And so a lot of what I try to do is I try to bring the numbers back to us, and I do it by making these kind of weird portraits, right, with data.
Well, in portraits, speaking of that, you build these maps of a country, for instance, using information taking from millions of dating profiles, and you glean some interesting nuggets about personal taste, which we won't go into on this public radio station. But you also used a gun that fires a blank every time a shooting was reported in New Orleans. Tell us about that project.
Yeah, that was a project that I did with a buddy of mine in New Orleans named Jonathan Ferrara. And it was part of an art show he did a couple years ago, called Guns in the Hands of Artists. And my piece is called Take a Bullet for This City. And the way it works is, any city that's got more than about 100,000 people in it, by law has to have an open data feed, right, about its crime reporting. So there has to be a computer somewhere, and this is true in KC, right? That is in, I don't know, the district attorney's office or the police department somewhere, where I can go online right now and say, was there a shooting last night? Was somebody mugged in my neighborhood? Was there a robbery? Whatever, whatever. It's for a better informed citizenry and a more transparent, police process, right? It makes sense. And so I can tap that and find all the shootings and then use a computer that kind of drives a mechanism to fire a gun. So what I do is I take a real gun and I weld it to a plate, so nobody can walk off with it, and it's in a box. And it's a the gun I've been using is a Walter 9mm, is a Walter 9mm semi, the sort of James Bond gun. And you fill it with blanks. So there's, so when it goes off, when there's a shooting reported in New Orleans or wherever, I tour it. I've had it in Ferguson, Missouri. I've had it in Boulder, Colorado. It's going to Washington, D.C. in a month. So it can listen to that city, and it'll fire a blank anytime a shooting's reported. And when you have a blank, there's still a cartridge, there's still a casing, right? There's no bullet, but there's still a thing. And so what happens is that flips out the side and it fills up, right? It's in a box. So the box fills up with spent casings. And that's your data visualization, if that makes sense. So I had the thing down in New Orleans for 4 months. New Orleans has a very large per capita gun violence problem. It's a fraction of the size of Chicago with almost as many shootings. And so that this case, this box, this vitrine, we call it, filled up with bullets, filled up with bullet casings.
You know, the danger, Luke, of treating people as numbers for you is what? What's the inherent difficulty or problem you're trying to avoid there?
So there's two things. One is just the dehumanization of it, just that we're gonna reach a point in our society where we're just really, really comfortable with being quantified. And that, I'm not like a super dystopian guy. I'm not like we're careering toward a police state and pretty soon we're going to have it all, etched on our, neck with like a barcode or something. I don't really necessarily think it'll be that kind of thing. But I do think it in terms of, the way your identity is sold and marketed, that worries me. It worries me that, when I log on to Google, the ads at the top know everything about my email. If I was just emailing my dad about, a lawnmower, suddenly they're trying to sell me a lawnmower. I'm like, I didn't really want you to know that about me. I mean, that's kind of benign. I don't really care. But it can get creepy really fast. And the second part of it, is just this idea that when we start seeing other people as numbers, it leads to these really big kind of flaws in how we kind of think about what should happen. So the most disturbing thing about the gun piece, you know, is that when you go into the gallery and you read about how it works, part of you wants it to go off. And that's like a really heartbreaking fact, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're disappointed when you leave and you didn't hear it fire, even though I tell you up front what that means,
right?
If it fires, it means someone was shot. Right. And like confronting that, do you know what I mean? Is like a really important thing, I think, for Americans to go through. We really need to like have a conversation with ourselves about what it means that, you know, we think of people as statistics now. You know, that bothers me. And I don't think that's a partisan issue. I think there's a lot of, you know, interesting, smart people all across the political spectrum who've identified this as a problem. And we just need more, you know, conversations about it.
Luc Dubois is my guest. He uses data to humanize people and their situations in some fascinating ways. He's all part of the TEDxKC event that starts at 6 on Friday evening at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. The live and simulcast venues are already sold out, but watch party tickets are still available. For more information, go to TEDxKC.org. And I should point out that Luc will share several projects that illuminate how the way we use technology reflects on us and our culture during his speaking event on Friday evening. Luc, how do you come up with the ideas for these things? Because that's the trick here, right? I mean, how are you brainstorming these things day in and day out to do what you do?
Sometimes I just stumble across them. I mean, I'm a political junkie, so we're revving up to a big election in November. So I spend a good hour or two every morning looking, reading the blogs and reading the papers and all that kind of stuff, looking for something that is interesting, but maybe isn't obvious. It's a little hard because when you have Donald Trump running for president, it's not even like shooting fish in a barrel, man. It's like shooting a barrel, because the guy generates his own data set that's crazy. And you got to kind of like negotiate that a little bit to try to find something that not everybody else sees.
What are you doing along the lines of the 2016 presidential race? Are you navigating that right now?
Yeah. I'll have an art show up in October in New York City. And I'll have a little bit of stuff also in San Francisco and hopefully some other places too. And some stuff online. I've been looking a lot at, what's different between this election and the last election is things like Twitter and the real dominance of Twitter as like a medium for communication. I've got both the candidates' tweets, but I've also got all the lists of all the people who follow them and respond to them, right? And I can sort of show you how polarized it is regardless of whether you're talking about Donald Trump or Secretary Clinton, right? The people who sort of, write back to you on Twitter, they either really hate you or they really love you. There's no, calm, collegial middle ground that's gone, right? And that's interesting. And it's interesting, like, sort of thinking about who those people are and how they connect. I think I'm going to make some kind of piece around that. Whenever the election comes around, I get really interested in language. And I've been doing this for years. I have a
Tell us about the State of the Union addresses, the project you did there with the presidents, Luc, because I thought that was fascinating where you compared the words that someone like George Washington used with the words that George W. Bush used.
Yeah, this is a piece I did in 2008 for the political conventions, actually. So it premiered in Denver during the DNC and then in the Twin Cities during the RNC in 2008. And what I did was I made a series of eye charts, like when you go to the optometrist eye charts, but instead of letters up there, they're words. And so there's an eye chart for every president of the United States, from George Washington to George W. Bush. And what you see is you see the 66 words in their State of the Union addresses that they use more than any other president. So they're all the words are unique. And what they're showing you is they're showing you sort of word frequency in comparison to everybody else. So George Washington, his number one word is gentleman. George Bush, his number one word was terror.
And that says something very telling, doesn't it?
And that says a lot, right? Mm-hmm. And again, it's not a partisan thing. I think depending on which side of the political spectrum you are, you will be satisfied with that answer, right? Because you know, that it, that's true. You know, it was terror. And some of them, you know, some of them are funny. You know, Richard Nixon's number one word was truly.
Yes.
Because, you know, Bill Safire,
of course.
his speechwriter, you know, was an amateur linguist. And so he did word counts. He really thought about what his boss was saying and what he needed it to mean. And, you know, whatever, like Bill Clinton, he spent his number one words 21st, like 21st century. You know, FDR has got all the good words. So he has democratic because he get 15 of those things. So he sort of wins all the time. you know, they're kind of a hoot and they're kind of a history lesson of, you know, our country through the rhetoric of the people in charge, right? The State of the Union is this big rhetorical moment for the presidency. And, you know, and I'll be making something, I'm not going to keep updating it with Obama because he wasn't president when I made the piece yet. And I'm just going to kind of let it stand. I'm going to do something else with him. I have all his speeches and I have all his words. And, you know, one of the things that I always really think is interesting about President Obama is he has a, he's a very distinctive voice, not just what he says, but how he says it. You know, he has a inflection and, you know, unlike pretty much everybody else who's ever been in the Oval Office, he can kind of carry a tune. He knows how to sing. So I'm thinking about like doing something with that maybe. But it's, you know, stay tuned. I'll send it to you.
That It'll sounds cool. great. Well, Luc Dubois has been my guest. He does interesting things with data. He's part of TEDxKC. He'll be appearing a Friday evening at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. More information, just go to TEDxKC.org. Luc, I find your stuff just fascinating. Congratulations and keep going, man. I really enjoy your stuff.
Steve, thanks so much. Thanks for having me today.
You bet.